Hello and welcome to the Pals Anime Lounge, a podcast where a bunch of pals get together to talk about anime. I'm host Ace, and joining me are Artura.
Hello everyone.
And Gozugoz.
Namu Amida Butsu.
In today's episode, we're talking about Salamander, a three-part OVA from 1987. I chose this one because I wanted to start the year with something big, and that's almost 3 hours long. This is big. Be prepared for, well, you've seen the estimated time of episode, which I have to put into iTunes every single time, so you know how long this is already. This anime was produced by Studio Pierrot, the studio behind Bleach, Naruto, and Sonic the Hedgehog the movie.
Oh my gosh, you can actually tell it's by... Wait, Bleach, Naruto, and... Oh, never mind. Never mind, if I had said Dragon Ball, because my wife and I were watching, and there's this city part, and we were like, oh my god, that looks like the city from the Dragon Ball, but now I'm an idiot.
No, but it definitely is reminiscent of Sonic the Hedgehog the movie.
Honestly, yeah, it's such a good point. I had forgotten we'd watched that one.
That was the first episode you were in.
We've watched a lot of things, okay.
Okay, well, Salamander currently has a My Anime List score of 5.85. This is based on Gradius, a series of side-scrolling shooter games developed by Konami. My brief synopsis is, when aliens attack, only heroes from another planet and Lord British can avert disaster. Hatsura, what do you have?
I love yours. Oh my god. Mine was, in Salamander, experience the story of three occurrences of the Salamander bacterium following a cast of three characters through different time periods.
And it goes.
It is. This might be embarrassing, but yeah. Space invaders, space prince, space politics, space melodrama. Occasionally, space Tim the Enchanter pops into the scene to warn about the space dragon, or some space action happens.
I mean, neither of yours are incorrect. Okay, we've got. I've got a lot of notes to get through because a lot happens in the first two episodes of this, so we'll get straight on. We open on narration telling us about thousands of years in the future, a giant dragon was born from a star, or something. Then a title card.
Okay. Oh my gosh, I just need to get it out of my system. I need to be angry about this. What do you mean a thousand light years into the future? Like, that's a distance measurement, not a freaking time measurement. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, the science in this OVA was iffy at best. I get into that in the third episode.
But if you travel at light speed, wouldn't the time pass differently for you?
Yeah, just watch the Disney movie Lightyear. Spoilers for Lightyear, I suppose.
Oh, he ends up in the future. He ends up in Interstellar.
We're not here to talk about Lightyear. There's lots of notes. Come on.
Can we talk about the Interstellar, though?
No.
Okay.
We come back to... They started talking about a test flight of a new warp system or something, but then it turns out that wasn't why they were in the ship at all. The subject quickly turns to a space obelisk in orbit of the planet.
I love that first exchange because the guys at the helm are talking about some science stuff and the prince in the back goes, cool story, bro.
Yes, apparently the ship belongs to Lord British. Interchangeably Lord and Prince British, so I mainly stuck to British. Who has returned to planet Lattice to see the obelisk, or one just like it, that has been found on the planet below. On the planet, British tells the priest that the temple being constructed here must continue despite them finding a 6-story tall obelisk with writing on it right where they were building. Later, in the palace, it transpires that British is two things, a prince and a racist. His advisors sent him on this trip that he'd just come back from, in hopes that he would find a princess to marry so he could ascend to the throne of his planet. He states that he doesn't want a wife, quote, whose ear is pointed or who has a tail. Racist.
I mean, he might be worried about mutation or inbreeding, too, right?
That would happen even if the person he married didn't have a tail or pointed ears.
Yeah, my wife and I were like, wow, racist. And like, well, we moved on because, well, British is a racist. It reminds me of another racist I know.
To be honest, I was more like weirded out by him because I am into pointed ears and tails.
Aren't we all?
Yeah, it's a good point, aren't we all?
British changes the subject to an, I'm not sure if this was a translation error, but an evil cult that he's been hearing rumours of called Bacterian. We cut to the building sites where the work crews have been unearthing the obelisk, where they break it in half by dropping it. In space, at the same time, the space obelisk breaks apart, destroying a ship as it does so. If you've seen the first season of Star Trek Discovery, that's what happens.
Oh.
A ship gets cut in half.
I like that after the obelisk hits a ship, they talk about how this is the first space accident to ever happen to them.
Yeah. I think that, well, at the start they did make a point of saying that the obelisk let out some sort of signal, so space traffic was very orderly, or along those lines.
I want to also mention that the obelisk looks like the Eastern Island statue. So, yeah, like, yeah. we now know what they do. Never break them, dude.
Yeah, the Easter Island obelisks. Where did they come from? Doesn't matter. They're keeping bacterians at bay. Leave them alone.
It's a big head. Don't break big stone heads.
As the priest talks to British about the prophecy from the start, a black cloud envelops Lattice. The priest talks about the planet Salamander, which is a red object in the sky and can be seen, unlike the planet Star, because the cloud is obscuring the star. It was weird that this spacefaring civilization didn't send any spaceships up to check what was going on, but hey.
They obviously have to be very cautious.
I mean, now it's likely that they're going to have space accidents.
Yeah.
It was like, it was a bit weird. It's like, we're advanced, we made spaceships, but shit, we're gonna still live like we're in medieval times.
As it begins snowing on the planet, a rarity on this warm 90% water planet, British hallucinates a fire dragon, and then an earthquake happens. These all seem like unrelated events, but they are indeed related.
Yeah, they're totally unrelated after the freaking priest warns you several times not to do something, and then it happens, and then they all happen back to back. Gosh, at this point I was like, oh my gosh, I hate British so much.
At a meeting, British orders the astronomers to check out planet Salamander, so they send ships, proving that they could have done this all along. Enemy fighters are sent to meet them, 5,000 enemy fighters to be exact, and they massacre the ships.
That was the first time they thought of using spaceships that they invented. Dude, we invented those spaceships, let's use them for this. Maybe it will work.
No, why would we do that? Shut up.
And Lord British was like, no, I'm gonna use my telescope!
British suggests out of nowhere that the planet is this bacterian thing he'd heard of, and commands Planet Salamander to be destroyed. As the ships head to do just that, an earthquake destroys a city. Or multiple cities, we only see the one, I suppose. Time apparently passes as we hear that people are starving, and cracks in the ground have swallowed up most of the water. And more ships had been sent to Planet Salamander and been sucked in. And there'd been no survivors.
Yeah, from now on, we will be hearing that the world, our planet, is ending, but everyone we see on screen will be okay just doing the stuff they did so far.
Yeah, they're just going to be chilling. The priest tells British to ask for help from Planet Gradius. Apparently, they had encountered the bacterium before and defeated it, so clearly a bunch of times passed, as earlier bacterium was just a rumor.
Oh my gosh, wait, that's a good point. Okay.
Well, I've been hearing rumors really about this bacterian thing. Oh, a neighboring planet has defeated them.
Oh my gosh, I did not see that one.
Well, they didn't like each other, so they didn't exchange any info, apparently.
Well, it turns out the priest had already contacted them, and Dan, Eddie, and Stephanie arrive. The trio had brought a present with them, a captured Bacterian fighter. They explain that they need to find the controller for the Bacterian, and then, while waiting for something to happen, Dan chats with the royal advisors, and Eddie goes looking around the decimated city to find a toy gun in some debris. This does pay off. And we also don't know what Stephanie is doing all this time. The priest tells Eddie that the people who used to live there had been deported years ago for treason. And later they're all briefed on Planet Salamander, and they're watching a scan of the inside of a crater which looks eerily like a level from Gradius. Or I suppose a level from Salamander. Suddenly a dragon appears on the screen, surprising everyone. Because it means that they're scanning the dragon. Later, as the trio from Gradius are chilling, the full attack is launched, and the heroes of Gradius are angry because they said there has to be lots of simulation practice before we can launch an attack, because clearly the planet has time for you to practice. It's not like everyone's freezing to death.
No, I mean they are, but they're also not. It's up in the air, you know, what's actually happening. Some people say people are dying and freezing, but some people are, apparently everything is okay.
So it might be fake news, is what you're saying?
We don't know, we just don't know.
I do see how it could be good fake news, to be honest. Everyone has somehow perished except for the important characters for the story.
As Dan had warned, the terrain inside the crater changes due to the dragon breathing, and it destroys the lattice's forces. Stephanie slaps British, and because everyone is dead, and Dan reveals that Stephanie is the daughter of the president of Gradius, who was turned into a cyber brain by the Bacterian. British explains that he hasn't followed their advice because one of them was spying. Eddie had gone into the city pretending to be sightseeing. He'd gone into the house of a family which had been disgraced for some reason. We were told earlier that it was actually treason, which was illegal. I mean, going to the house was illegal. Clearly, the treason was also illegal.
This is the moment where we start realizing that, you know, Lord British saying for some reason, it is not just a one-time thing, because that was the second time he said
it. I just want to bring this up, like, what if Lord British and the ministers are like, oh, we have a prince, big planet, big kingdom, but it's like just all the people on the screen, that's all the people that are on the planet. They're just pretending that it's a big empire or whatever.
It might well be, because as we were told, the planet is 90% water, so there's not a lot of land for people to live on.
And it's like those people from Gradius came over and they're like making shit up about the laws. Oh, you broke in the laws. I'm not sure which ones, but you did.
Not a horrible theory.
Eddie explains that the reason diplomatic relations between Lattice and Gradius were strained was because Gradius had taken in the exiled Evans family, who were the legitimate royal family. More, Eddie's full name was Eddie Evans. He was a descendant of the disgraced family.
Actually, it was Evans.
Sorry, yes, Evans. It turned out that the toy that Eddie had been playing with for the past 5 minutes of screen time belonged to his father. So he hands it over to British and says his goodbyes, since as a descendant, he's technically also exiled from the planet.
So now we know he broke three laws.
Beneath the planet, directly under the broken obelisk, a dragon stirs and causes an earthquake. The dragon is never seen after this point. Dan, Stephanie, and British get in their jets and encounter no resistance, managing to destroy the cyberbrain controller on the planet, and then minimal resistance before destroying the giant floating head. But before they can destroy the final piece, the dragon attacks. The dragon that was on the other planet, not the one that was under Planet Lattice. There's a lot of dragons in these three episodes. Luckily, Eddie arrives to save the day by sacrificing himself to destroy the dragon from inside.
And with a final scene, and I quote, I'm doing this for my father, not for you. Such a badass.
Planet Salamander explodes and the heroes barely escape, minus Eddie. And later on Lattice, British decides to marry Stephanie as she's the only woman he's met.
No, that's not the reason.
I mean, she's the only woman who's been on screen.
Come on now, we can't be an unreliable narrator.
Dan leaves in his jet after overhearing them without saying bye, and obviously Stephanie follows him in her jet. And that's the first episode. We get the credits over a view of the planet Lapis. Song's not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad, but I skipped in the end. I was like, meh. Like, this is already 58 hours long. I might as well give myself 2 seconds.
OVA 2 opens in the year 2381 on President Lee McBain of the planet Gradius on a spaceship talking about diplomatic relations with various planets. He's apparently cancelled a visit to planet Lattice because they're not on friendly terms. The ship is 6 hours away from Gradius when a number of objects appear on radar headed right towards them. So many, in fact, they're blocking out a nearby star in the form of a gas cloud. They attempt to change course, but the cloud overtakes them, revealing scales and talons. It's a space dragon, which destroys the ship. We get the title card. We cut to a small ship surveying some wreckage. The president's daughter, Stephanie, being one of the crew aboard, Dan and Eddie being the other two, the aforementioned heroes of Gradius. As you might be able to tell, this is a prequel.
I mean, if the year 2300 and something wasn't an indicator enough, which, by the way, how on earth, like, I feel like that was supposed to be our hint that that was the prequel, but we never had a date before.
Oh, sorry, it was space year 2381, wasn't it?
Yeah, which, by the way, how do you even count that? Does everyone have a different time?
Well, in Star Trek, they have star dates, which all the whole of civilization use. You basically know if it was a star date, this, then that means it was roughly 200 years ago.
I'm assuming it's kind of like the age of the sun.
But they board the wreckage and find it full of decaying alien corpses and one living human female named Paula.
Yeah, the freaking aliens there were horrible looking. And it really taught me why Lord Divish was racist. I mean, sorry, not Divish, British.
Then we cut to the planet, where a group of men are listening to a pre-recorded message from Paula, who had left Sonal 5 to warn about the threat of the Bacterians. It goes on to explain that the gas cloud was the Bacterians, or something. The translation in this episode confused me a little, because sometimes, oh yeah, that's the Bacterians, but no, actually, this is the Bacterians, but the whole thing is just one Bacterian. But...
And then, like, one of the characters, like, takes a toothbrush and says, oh, I have time to get rid of the Bacteriums in my mouth.
Okay, that was good.
Oh, like, it's very confusing.
Apparently the Bacterians took the planet from plants and ground to some kind of fleshy organism, so Paula's people abandoned the planet. We cut to Stephanie, Dan, and Eddie, who are watching a revived Paula meditate on a monitor. They're watching her on the monitor, she isn't meditating on top of a monitor.
Important distinction.
Eddie explains that they haven't left the hospital in 5 days and are probably being quarantined, which seems to surprise too. Like, they didn't realize they hadn't left the hospital in 5 days.
No way. We've been here for... I thought that was only fake Earth cycles. And that's why dates are so confusing.
What if they entered the building and it seemed like a normal building, but then after the door closed, people outside just changed the sign and revealed that it's a hospital?
A totally possible and not ludicrous idea.
Anyway, Dan and Eddie start bickering and the two of them leave the room, and Stephanie stops paying attention to the monitor, and Paula uses this opportunity to do something. We never find out what, she just reacts in a way that suggests she's doing something. We cut to a ship that's been sent to check out the gas cloud, only to find that they've come out of warp inside the cloud. The cloud destroys the ship, and we cut back to Paula waking from her meditation an instant before Eddie comes into the room. He explains that the Bacterian cloud has now covered Gradius, so they were being sent out to the front line to fight, no longer under quarantine. As the Bacterian turned inorganic matter to organic matter, the government had equipped ships with a shield that could protect against the effects for 1 hour. This 1 hour thing never comes up again.
I love when you do that.
Because the rest of the episode isn't even an hour, so they have enough, clearly.
I mean, technically it's mentioned one more time, but it doesn't. It's not an important plot point or anything. Dee and Stephanie set course in their fighters for Planet 7, where the Bacterian controller was, according to Paula. And as they fly, Stephanie hears someone calling her name, and it warns her not to go. As they approach the planet, it's been turned into a fleshy horror show. They're attacked by a creature, and as soon as they destroy it, the planet produces more of them. An aircraft carrier, apparently, chases after the trio, and they have to pause their mission to go on a counterattack when fighters attack them. Thanks to the voice in Stephanie's head, they avoid most of the fighters, as it turns out they ignore anything small that's avoiding them. We cut to the three back at base, receiving orders, and Eddie is grounded because he broke formation, and he wasn't ordered to. There's an extended sequence of Eddie heading to the planet surface before we cut to Eddie keeping an eye on Paula, apparently on his own time. Because he says, oh yeah, us on the ground, we have lots of downtime.
Which, by the way, interestingly enough, is something he says to Lord British. I think it's him. I'm not actually sure if it's him or Dan. But in the first episode, someone tells him, man, how much time do you how much free time do you people have?
I missed that. As they talk, Paula seems to suggest that Eddie isn't from around here, which he vehemently denies. She changes the subject, saying that the controller of the cloud and fighters is probably on Gradius already. She could probably locate it if she was taken out of the hospital from under military guard.
Man, they're really being quarantined all the time, huh?
So Eddie takes her in her jet, following the feeling that Paula has until she's attacked by an invisible force. We cut to space, where Stephanie and Dan are in formation heading into the cloud. Stephanie is contacted by the voice, which turns out to be her father, and told to turn around and find him in Fortress Zelos. His voice cuts off and she slams on the brakes, and Dan notices and takes off after her while the commander has a go at them. We cut back to the planet, where an old tourist attraction obelisk is giving off some force that's hurting Paula. And if you saw the first episode, the obelisk looks familiar. A dust storm kicks up as Paula approaches the obelisk, injuring her and blowing her back, and also revealing scales on her arm.
And then the obelisk shoots hula hoops out there.
It does.
Dun, dun, dun. Who expected anything like this to ever transpire? Oh my god, I was shocked.
The obelisk rises out of the desert sand as Paula begs Eddie to destroy it. In space, Stephanie and Dan encounter a massive ship, Fortress Zelos. They board as the attack on Planet 7 commences. Back on the planet, the obelisk fires explosive energy rings at Paula while Eddie gets in his ship to attack. She could have definitely accompanied him into the ship. I have no idea why he just left her dodging these damn rings.
They look like they could cut you in half. And he was like, no, I'm going to go over there into my ship.
Eddie out. Aboard Fortress Zelos, Stephanie and Dan encounter a giant brain, which turns out to be the president. It turns out that the president is the controller of the Bacterians. He begs them to destroy him, as Eddie destroys the obelisk, which wasn't the controller at all. It was keeping the Bacterian away from the planet, which we knew because this is a prequel. The obelisk was already explained as a thing that was keeping Bacterians away.
I mean, here's the thing. I feel like the prequel would have been better as the first one. Yeah. You know, like, they just show you everything. Like, you're supposed to be surprised that the president is the brain, and you're supposed to be surprised that the obelisk is actually holding back bacteria. And I'm like, no, I learned all of this with Sir Racist British over there.
I mean, Salamander was the second game. Gradius was the first game, and yet they're just, no, we'll call this Salamander, and we'll put Gradius as the second episode.
It was a horrible design choice, and I'm angry.
Paula explains how Eddie screwed up, and Planet 7 grows some dragons to destroy the human ships. We get unexpected nudity as Paula transforms into a giant dragon and flies away, leaving Eddie to go on and on about how he didn't actually trust her, he was just lying, and his family were nobles from another planet.
Dun-dun-dun! He's what?
Dan and Stephanie blow up the president's brain, and Fortress Zealous disappears. Planet 7 returns to normal, which looks like the moon, and Paula dissipates into smoke. Stephanie and Dan fly back home to get punished like Eddie was for disobeying orders, and that's the end of the second OVA, with credits over the backdrop of a scrolling Gradius level. OVA 3 begins with a quick summary of the first two, and then there's an eclipse and a red circle with some ominous groaning. It wasn't a great pre-title card sequence, I will say. We open on British and Dan catching up on Dan and Stephanie's recent promotions, showing that some time has passed. And I do wonder if Eddie got a posthumous promotion because he did the same thing that they did. A ceremony was going to take place the next day to celebrate a friendship agreement between Gradius and Lattice, which is what we cut to immediately. And then the daytime party afterwards, which British decides to ditch so he can meet up with Dan. He'd gotten Dan to set something up for him, which it turns out to be Stephanie, alone in a dress. And British makes small talk while Dan waits in hiding, waiting for him to tell Stephanie his true feelings. But he doesn't get a chance, as it goes dark due to a solar eclipse. That's fine, because it turns out today was specifically chosen because of the eclipse, and some fireworks begin. As he's running late, British heads back to the reception, but before he gets there, a second sun appears from behind the first one. Or I suppose technically from behind the moon.
I want to say that I appreciate the fake out, that the sky goes dark, but it's just the eclipse, it's not the gas.
That was good, I did. I also appreciate that. A bright beam of light lances down from the sky and takes the form of a dragon to kidnap Stephanie. Jets are dispatched to intercept the massive ship which the dragon has just returned to, however they're told not to attack as Stephanie might be aboard.
By the way, I like that their protocol is, there's an unknown ship, you three, go fly there and blow it up if they don't speak back to you. That was the plan. Shoot missiles at it.
I mean, it was the 80s. All countries were acting like that in the 80s.
What are they, Klingons?
As they follow the ship, it goes into the new sun through a sunspot, and they call off pursuit, though it's too late as they're caught in the gravity field and killed. There's a briefing about the Bacterian controlling an artificial star, explaining it as an inside-out planet. The core of hot stuff is on the outside, and the cool crust is on the inside. Someone suggests blowing it up with a nuclear missile, somehow missing the fact that stars create light and heat thanks to nuclear fusion. What's worse is they will shortly shoot missiles at the sun. Anyway, British says that they'll just nuke any ship that comes out of the artificial star instead, so they don't risk hurting Stephanie. It's not like they kidnapped her to turn her into a cyber brain or something, right?
Oh, no.
When Dan actually voiced that opinion, I laughed. Because I made that note, and then he said it. I was like, ha!
I want to say that I appreciate that also. Because for a second I thought that they're just going to turn her into damsel in distress. But then it turns out, they taken her because they taken her father and, like, they have some traits that they look for.
And, of course, military secrets and stuff.
Yeah.
We cut to Stephanie tripping balls or hallucinating or something, reliving memories of her parents that might not have happened to her. Her hallucination tries to brainwash her into becoming a Bacterian before she wakes, stuck to some kind of web. The light dragon enters the cave she's in and turns into Paula. She kidnapped her for her brain, as Dan suspected, and she points out a big face in the cave wall named Gopher, who will be the recipient of Stephanie's cyberbrain when she gets turned into one. Out in space, they start firing nukes into the star to entice the Bacterians to come out. I mean, I'm just guessing they were nukes because they were making big explosions. The sunspot opens for a ship to come out, so British and Dan's jets join the hundreds of others in an attack on the big ship. Enemy fighters join the fray. There's an extended fight scene before British and Dan board the enemy ship on a whim. It's not what they had planned. They just happened to be near the bay door and go inside. They land in hiding before the fighters return to dock, and the ship returns through the sunspots into the artificial star. Paula turns herself into crystal, and then the ship also, which somehow makes the two human ships drop out, instead of, you know, be trapped inside a crystal. Dan and British set out in their jets to look for Stephanie. She is, of course, hallucinating and being brainwashed. Luckily, their jets find her, and the pair use their ship's lasers to free her. She slaps Dan and thanks British for the rescue. She says, because of the way you saved me, or something, to Dan.
It's confusing, very confusing.
And the trio make their escape as Paula realizes that they're intruders and sets the planet to kill. Thanks to Stephanie's new knowledge of the Bacterium, like the eye, shoot it in the eye about a creature that is just an eye, they are able to make good progress.
Kicking in their balls!
Paula awakens Gopher by going inside it, birthing a new type of dragon. I mean, they called it a firebird, but it looked more like a dragon to me.
I mean, everything's a dragon here, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I think it was a hippogriff.
Why change the tradition now?
The jets fight the dragon, and all three of them get to have a go. And British is baffled when Stephanie has the controls and her and Dan are flying around doing maneuvers, and it just kept cutting to British with a look on his face. And I found that hilarious.
Oh my god, a woman did this? Or something?
Oh my gosh, he's not racist, he's sexist too. God damn it.
Paula is defeated and the star disappears. Back on Galarian.
Galarian, excuse me?
Wait, I wrote the wrong word, didn't I? Oh god, this. We watched Galarian because I thought it was Gradius.
Oh my god, I.
Oh no.
I watched Salamander.
No, we watched Galarian again, dude. Haven't you noticed? Back on Gradius, British decides not to confess to Stephanie because Fenn and her work well together. He departs, promising his advisors that they'll stop off at a different planet to get laid. And then the credits roll over. British's ship flying. And then we get an advert for Gradius 2. Because this was taken from the Laserdisc, which is obviously better than the VHS version, most unlikely is. But yeah, this has never come out on DVD, so Laserdisc is all we got.
Release the Galarian's cut!
So, was this a good adaptation?
Alright. I mean,
it was.
I want to hear your opinion.
I think it wasn't the worst, but it wasn't good. There was too much exposition, too much talking and stuff like that. The episodes could use trimming. Definitely.
Yeah, that's more your Yata Nani or Baka. As an adaptation, was this a suitable adaptation?
I don't know.
Look, I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't like it as an adaptation. Like, it didn't need to be 5 hours of talking for the type of game it is, in my opinion.
Yeah, the game is all action, pretty much.
Well, it had side-scrolling, it had literal levels from the games, the enemy designs, obviously, from the games. It did a better job than I would have.
I'm just saying that if there was, like, if they cut out, like, 75% of non-action, then it would have been a good adaptation.
And called it Gradius and put it in the correct order. So was this a Yeta, a Nani, or a Baka, Arturo?
To me, it was a Nani. Honestly, the first episode wasn't so bad, but it started feeling really long. Like, within the first two episodes, it was already starting to feel a bit long. And it's like the same story. I understand, you know, it's supposed to be like that, but it just didn't click with me, but it wasn't so bad for me to give it just a Baka.
Okay, and goes.
Yeah, I think I agree with Arturo. Like, the first episode was definitely the worst for me, and then it got better as it went on, kind of redeemed itself. Especially, I think, in the second episode, they had, like, an action sequence with some action music, and that kind of lifted my spirits a bit. It won me over, and yeah, then episode 3 was more of that.
For me, it was a Nani. It's slow moving, except for the endings, which are all rushed. Like, all three of them have a rushed ending. The captured fighter from the first episode, that never comes up again. It's like, hey, we brought this, and look at what it does when stuff moves near it, and yep, that's it. We didn't research it, we didn't pull it apart to find out what makes these things tick. Nope, just... that's it.
I mean, isn't that how they got the kind of like the schematics for the first bit? That they were like, we have to keep watch of that? Or did I misunderstand?
Honestly, that might have been the case. I might have glanced away to check that I wasn't making huge typos while typing a note.
A lot of the stuff wasn't very clear.
No, it wasn't. And I felt in the first episode, they didn't act like they did in the next two episodes. Like, especially the trio from Gradius, they acted all snooty and oh yeah, we're the heroes, we're too good to be here. And then in the second episode, we see you weren't all that, and also you barely did anything. You blew up your dad's brain. Come on, that's something I noticed. In the second episode, Dan says that he's the one who fired the killing shot, and then in the first episode, he says that she did it, not him.
It's just that even as an anime, like, I like to see these. One of the fun parts is that I'm watching this without knowing anything about the games for the most part. I was so confused. My wife and I started, and we were like, oh, British looks like, you know, the villain of the story. And then he continued appearing for like the next 48 minutes. And I was like, oh my God. British is the protagonist, and then the next, the three heroes popped up. It's like, oh, I guess they're the protagonists, and then we were in the past, and then we were back in the future. So I'm not changing my score because I kind of liked it, like, strangely enough, but oh my God, like, it was so bad in some aspects.
So does it deserve its My Anime List score of 5.85?
I mean, I'm going to be a bit pedantic and say 5.85 is a bit big. 5.84, no, I'm just kidding. I actually think like a 5.5 or 5 just flat is better. But I'm not opposed to 5.8 for this one.
Goes?
Yeah, something like 5 or 6 is fine for this, I think. There was animation.
Some bits there wasn't much animation, and a couple of times I noticed that they were reusing the same bits, like the dragon swimming around in the first episode.
Yeah, and I wanted to mention this. The dragon looks like Shenron.
Oh my God, fuck? I said the same to my wife. I was like, oh my gosh, it's evil Shenron. And she was like, stop being racist.
Evil Shenron is all like buff, isn't he?
Oh, no, I mean, like, a fake evil Shenron, because I didn't actually know there was an evil Shenron.
Actually, I might be thinking of the Namekian Shenron.
I think evil Shenron is also buff in Dragon Ball GT.
Yeah, I saw, like, 4 episodes of that so many years ago, I've retained no information about that show. Personally, I might even push it to a 6.5, because it was meh, but it was almost good.
I mean, that's the way I feel about it, but the problem is sometimes you think about certain aspects of it, and then it starts being bad again. I don't even know why, but it's like, depending on the thing I'm considering, like, oh, you know, they should have done the prequel before the sequel. Yeah, it wasn't that good, but, like, it doesn't matter. You were still going to find out eventually. Or then it's like, oh, there's a bunch of inconsistencies sometimes, and I was just confused 58% of the time. Then I start being like, yeah, maybe, like, a 3.5 is good enough for it. I've never been this conflicted about an anime on this podcast. I'm usually very, like, sure on what I'm going to say.
Right, well, that's... brings us to the end of our episode. Thank you for joining me, Atsura and Gozugos.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Pals Anime Lounge, and better yet, thank you for subscribing wherever you found this episode. You can find more from us on GameGrin.com, finding us on social media, or listening to the Grincast podcast. And until next time, game on.